Well, I think Trish finally hit a rock bottom.
Maybe she did, but she flipped the script.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can access the live stream on digitalstreamradio.com every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On today's show, we are going to welcome AJ Gibson. He is the author of Flipping the Script, Bouncing Back from Life's Rock Bottom Moments, a book that highlights self-empowerment, dealing with hardships, and turning them all around while knowing that we are not alone. My name is Tom, and I am your host. And as always, I'm here with my great friend, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
Oh, my God. That's got to be like the first time in quite a few, I would say maybe 4 or 5 episodes that we got The Dish.
But Trish didn't fuck it up.
Yeah.
I see where this episode is going. It hasn't even started. Great.
You know, I was just, I just noticed that. But anyway, so we're here. It's Monday. We're recording for our Patreon listeners. Our apologies. We were having technical difficulties trying to set up the setup for recording.
And by that,
shut up.
We was busy.
So, no, but I'm trying to see if I can get a second camera so that we don't have to interrupt the live stream via video, because I think that they would get so much more seeing the entire show in its entirety rather than half.
Well, since we're redoing all the lighting in the studio, what we should do is like put a little bit of a rig with a camera that we can spin around the room. Is this too much?
Can we just tie you up to the rig? Actually, no. That might not work.
It would
might come crashing down.
Oh my God, the whole house would come crashing down.
Seriously? Like, yeah! So you remember that rainbow that we were going to put up on the ceiling? Well, we did, and it fell off.
Mm-hmm. She came crashing down.
So, yeah, no. So I'm in the process of doing. There's so much. Tiles are going to go up. Recessed lighting is going in. And, you know, so I also want to make sure that we have good lighting, too, so that you guys could see that. So hanging tight. We're still going to do it. We're just trying to figure out the best way to do that.
Good thing they couldn't see that.
What did you do?
She's
smelling her armpit.
She did, yeah.
She's a little nasty.
She had to move offices today, and it's humid as hell. She was sweaty.
It was.
Right when I look up, she's got her nose buried in the pit and then makes eye contact with me. And is like, yeah, I saw that.
See, I don't realize what I do, and then I look up and I see these two queens, and I'm like, oh, shit.
Well, at least we're not recording. Like someone we know records everything, and then like 5 years later, he sends you the video.
Every single year, I get a reminder of a certain photo. So
it's nasty. Anyway, so welcome back. Do you guys want to talk about your weekends a little bit?
Sure. I mean, like I worked all weekend. I did have a nice day yesterday.
What did you do?
So I went and spent time with this gentleman caller. And we had sort of like a brunchy lunch dinner. And I met two couples that are new to New Haven, both very lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lovely afternoon. It was really interesting, though, because I hope they don't listen to our show. Because me and there were four couples, including myself and the guy I was with. And one of the couples, they've been here forever, you know, whatever. So we've known them for years, and the other two we didn't know. And so me and my friend and the other couple were kind of quietly like passing judgment the whole time. You know what I mean? But like not in a bad way, but just being like trying to feel these people out,
trying to figure them out.
Yeah, like, yeah,
who
yeah.
Are you?
Like
who are you?
You guys seem way too classy to have moved to New Haven. So who are you, and why are you here?
She's nasty. But so what I got out of that whole thing, couple, do you have something you would like to share with us?
Nothing is official.
Okay.
I am dating somebody.
Okay, good. That's all we need to know. Yeah. I just want, because you said couple. I'm like, we're all couples. And I'm like, I looked at Chris.
Oh, yeah, we made
I'm
eye like, contact. Mm. It's like, mm.
I have to say, like, I'm taking it really slow. We all know my history if you're a dedicated listener.
Struggle bus.
It's been a history. Mm-hmm. I've never had somebody treat me so well my entire life.
So it's worth taking your time though. You know, why rush? We've got our whole lives ahead of us.
I'm 31. Like, I'm not rushing into things anymore. Yeah. Stick it and quit it. I'm done with it.
Christopher, how was your weekend?
Busy, exhausting, but worth it. I volunteered at that beer fest all weekend. Mm-hmm. I didn't make it on Sunday, but I volunteered Friday and Saturday, and it was a lot of fun. All the people that were there for the fest were having a really good time. We were singing a lot, you know, we were pouring drinks. And I was fighting off bees. I've never had to work around so many wasps in my life.
Honey, wait, are you talking about the physical wasp or wasps?
I'm talking fucking sting the fuck out of you wasps.
Oh, okay. Yeah, same thing, though.
Not, yeah, right, exactly. Not okay. Like, when I was driving there on Saturday, I was giving myself a pep talk. I'm like, okay, you're gonna get stung today. You're gonna get stung today. Just be ready to get stung today. I luckily did not get stung, but I was dodging bees, making drinks. They were literally, there would be like 12 of them on the soda gun. And I would have to reach in and grab the gun by its hose, so hoping they would all get off. So it was terrifying.
You know what would have happened if that was me behind that bar. Exactly. I'd be like, no, I can't do this.
She would have been running around.
Nope, yeah. Can't do this.
I was not okay in the beginning. I was like, I don't know. I don't think I can do this. I don't think I can do this. But we got through it. And once the sun went down, they went to bed. And I was like, okay, we're good now.
Actually, though, unless Tommy wants to talk about his weekend, that's a perfect segue because you were bartending.
No, go right ahead.
What's our cocktail today, Christopher?
Oh, that's a good segue. Yes, indeed.
Queens of segues.
That's right. Making a connection. And speaking of connection, this cocktail is the French Connection. Mm. See what I did there, kind of?
Yeah, no.
Yes, this is one that I had saved from a while ago for classic summer cocktails. And like I said, the French Connection, it consists of Lillet and Cognac. They're two French liqueur or French liquors. And in mixing glass, the way you build this cocktail is in a mixing glass with ice. You add 1 ounce Lillet, 1 ounce Cognac, and then one dash of Angostura and orange bitters. Finally, add a quarter ounce of honey syrup, which is honey cut with equal parts of hot water. You want to make sure the water's hot so the honey dissolves better. And you stir well, strain into a rocks glass with some fresh ice, and garnish with an orange peel. Enjoy.
For some reason to me, it doesn't sound like a summer cocktail, though. It sounds like a heavier cocktail.
The Lillet is nice and light.
Okay, it's the that's floral. True.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Exactly. And then the Cognac is, you know, it's grapes. It's like a very intense wine, essentially, but it's...
And then you're cutting the honey, so it's not so heavy.
Right, exactly. And then you have the freshness of the orange bitters with it. So,
and ice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like...
Chills it down.
But, like, how is it beneficial to your health?
It's not. It just gets you drunk.
But there's honey, if you buy local, it's great for allergies.
And I'm not sniffling right now, so I think the cocktail. So yes, it's delicious. It is nutritious. It has many benefits, and I highly recommend you having it with your coffee in the morning. Make one of those. You'll be good to go every day.
And some toast.
Sure.
Oh, Lord have mercy. But anyway, it's a delicious cocktail, so we implore that you try it. Try it at home. Build your cocktails. Let us know what you think about them. Like, seriously, like, if you guys are really like going through and building your cocktails, send us a little note.
Be like, yeah, I love that one. Or be like, that one was garbage.
Yeah. No. And then we can blame Christopher for
once.
Oh
my God, you just reminded me. What? So on Saturday, so I had to work Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the bar, which is not normal for me. And Saturday, I was just going through it. Like, I was like, this crowd, I cannot handle this crowd. I can't deal with these people right now. And this one person came up to me and they were like, can I get a Long Island? And I don't know what came up, like what happened inside of me, but it just like, I was like, you know that that's like terrible for you. That's like garbage people cocktails. And he's like, but they get you fucked up. It has like everything in it. And I was like, okay, well, your hangover is going to be terrible. Yeah. And the whole time I'm going through this with this person, I'm thinking to myself, this is Chris's fault. Chris put in my head that Long Island's are garbage people cocktails. And so I'm like slamming this poor little kid because of you.
For our, no, well, I want to set this for the record. For our listeners who enjoy the Long Island, that was not a quote from me. It was a quote from a video I saw online, and I thought it was hilarious, so it stuck with me. I did not.
Well, I happen to think that a Long Island iced tea is a rite of passage, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you go through your stages. Like, you know, when you first hit college, it's all about the gin and tonics. And then when you first, like, get out of that whole gin and tonic phase and you start going into some better cocktails, one of the first cocktails that you ask for is a Long Island iced tea. And typically, these are people that are between the ages of 18 and 25. And then after
not that we, like, serve anybody below the age of 21 at a bar. We don't.
No, I'm just saying, in some states it is legal to drink under the age of 21. But where? I don't know. I think south, somewhere in the south.
Not legally. Maybe it happens, but.
No, I think you can.
No.
Oh, man, no, excuse me. Some countries will allow.
Yes, countries.
Absolutely. Yes. I was like, I don't know. So, what.
But even in house parties. So the Long Island iced tea is one of those cocktails that it's a rite of passage. And then once you're through them and you're done, don't ever go back. Like, seriously, if you're, like, in your 30s, like Trish, or in your 40s, like me, or in your 20s, 30s.
I ain't 30 yet.
You're going to be soon.
He's in his 20s.
I'm in my 20s still.
Like, in your late 20s, like Chris, just don't go for the Long Island iced tea, because you are going to get a serious hangover.
But, you know, you're completely right.
Well, liquor.
When you have, like, college people coming into a bar, they always order the basic cocktails, because that's all they know, mm-hmm. right? So they come in, they get their Long Islands, they get their gin and tonics, they get their vodka sodas, mm-hmm. or Amaretto Sours. That's a huge one, too. Mm-hmm. There's like a core group of maybe six cocktails that they just, like, know. So they come in, and that's what they order. And it's not until they actually spend time that's not, like, a club bar, at, like, an actual nice bar, that they learn, oh, this is what a good cocktail actually tastes mm-hmm. like.
Like, or this is what good vodka actually is.
Exactly.
I did hear where the story of where the Long Island came from. And so many bartenders or mixologists will say, well, this is really where it came from. And another one will be like, well, this is the real story. But the story I had heard about where the Long Island came from.
Christopher's going to tell us the real story.
This is one of the stories I've heard. Regardless, I think it's a great story.
Hold on. I think we need... Everybody, welcome to This is Story Time with Chris.
So, back on Long Island, when the housewives...
Where?
Long Island.
Okay. Long Island.
Long Island.
Anyway, while the housewives were at home and their husbands were, you know, off working, they didn't want their husbands to know that they were drinking all day. So instead of hitting hard at one bottle, they would take a little bit out of each bottle so they wouldn't notice the bottles getting lower, or they would get lower evenly so it wasn't as noticeable for them. And then they would put a splash of Coke in it so it looked like when they were sitting by the pool, they were just drinking glasses of iced tea. You know, not to mention for the fact, you know, after you have your third one and the husband comes home, hey, honey, how are you? It's so great. How's your work? I've been making a dinner. And she falls in the pool. Like, I mean, you can't, like, there's only so many you can have before it's obvious you ain't having some tea.
Honey, it's smoking in the kitchen. Oh, my God, not me, love.
I can't. yeah. Oh, my story. God, I'm going to die.
Great story.
I'm going to die. Oh. No, it's a good story, though. I think that's the real version. That's it. We'll go with that one. Mm-hmm. At least that's the official Gay Talk version of what a Long Island iced tea, or where at least it came from.
Our stamp of approval.
All right. Well, listen, we have a guest today. We're super excited. AJ Gibson is going to join us. So we want to talk briefly about a couple of stories that we have that we've dug up before we go on break and bring our guest in. So I'm going to kick it off very quickly. I just wanted to point out that, you know, as we all know, Senator John McCain passed away over the weekend. And, you know, there's been quite a lot of controversy and a lot of, like, really good well wishes to the family. But there's also been a lot of craziness regarding, you know, his record, et cetera. But in the end, you have to think about, at least I think, that this is probably one of the few Republicans that are left that had some sort of kind of sense of civility in him, and that he approached policy in a way that was deep and personal for him. And yes, there were a lot of things that were that he voted for that could have affected a lot of people. But in the end, we would be remiss, or at least I would be remiss to not mention that, you know, we have to think about the fact that he served our country in the military. He was a prisoner of war. He served for many years as a senator, in our government. So, I mean, this is a civil servant. He spent literally his entire life serving our country. And regardless of your political views or where you come from or what you believe, that has to be some sort of, at least one of the few things that you can acknowledge in someone is their ability to actually devote their entire life to public service.
Absolutely.
And so to the family, may he rest in peace. And, you know, my condolences seriously to the McCain family. It's not easy losing anybody, regardless of what party you're in. But that being said, I do take some consolement in the fact that allegedly, according to NBC, right? Because there's ABC, CBS. NBC News allegedly has individuals who have reported that McCain does not want Trump to attend his funeral services.
Brought to you by Gay Talk.
That's right. Yes. And it really warms my heart that he has actually or had asked before he passed that George W. Bush and Barack Obama both deliver eulogies on his behalf at his funeral, which I thought was amazing because you got to remember that John McCain and Barack Obama actually were contenders for the presidential elections of 2008.
Yes, he actually lost to both George W. Bush and Barack Obama because he had lost the primary against George W. Bush when George was running for president. You know, so he had lost to both of these men, but still had enough respect for who they were and how they served our nation.
Of course. And, you know, one of the beautiful things about this is that you're going to have our nation's first black president and our nation's craziest president, because I think George W. Bush was completely, like, hilariously crazy. Boy, would I take George Bush any day over Donald Trump. But I think it's just fitting that they've both accepted such responsibility with dignity and grace, and that that's what's going to be happening.
I think they're more happy that Trump won't be there.
I think everybody's happy that that's not going to happen. However, I do think Mike Pence will make an appearance.
Yeah. I saw on CNN that Mike Pence will be attending. He will be. And then, of course, like you have here, and I had heard as well, Joe Biden will be speaking at an event honoring him in Arizona. Mm-hmm. As you know, Joe Biden and John McCain were incredibly close.
Yes, they were.
They were divided with so many issues, but they were able to put that aside. They were very good friends.
Well, they also had something in common. So if you remember, Beau Biden passed away as a result of brain cancer.
The same kind of brain cancer
that John McCain succumbed to.
Right.
So I think that it's just very, it's a very sad story to see. I mean, again, kudos to him for being such a long public servant and serving our country in so many facets. Well wishes and condolences to the family. Absolutely. So that being said, unless you guys have anything to add to that, we can move on to some of the stories that we have. Yes? No? All right. Well, Chris, while she's digging in her book over here, why don't you
take
a crack at yours?
This is another issue I have with some organized religion. As we know, the Catholic Church has been making headlines, especially within the past week and a half, with the issue coming out of, I believe it was Pennsylvania, but it was a DC priest that had the accusations of molestation against him, and the Pope was just in Ireland, met by a lot of animosity and you know, the Catholic people feel repulsive at a point toward the organization, like the Catholic Church at the moment, being one of the largest Catholic inhibited nations on earth. There's another issue hitting back home here where churches are still allowed to get away with discrimination. And this is going to Indianapolis High School, where teens met with Ron Colley High School's Archbishop on Sunday to plead for the return of their guidance counselor, who was fired after officials discovered that she was married to a woman. After 15 years of serving the students and the school, she was removed from her job. Well, she was given three options after a parishioner requested a copy of her marriage certificate and found out that she was married to a woman. The three options were, number one, divorce, two, resign, or three, wait to be fired.
Well, and time out. Why does that parishioner have the right to ask for her marriage license?
Is this a Catholic school?
It's a Catholic school.
That's why.
Yeah. That's why. A private school.
It's a private Catholic school, and unfortunately, the law there is driven by doctrine. It's not a public school. So it's not like you can't fire someone for it.
I get it. Right. I understand it, yeah.
But that's the issue where it's going, even when you look back to the Boy Scouts of America, that being a private club, it was lawful for the Boy Scouts of America to say that you cannot be gay. You can't be openly gay and be a member of the Scouts. Then that was reduced to you cannot be gay to be a Scout Master. And then it was put down to where it was even a vote to where now you are allowed to be gay in the Boy Scouts of America. And now it's even open to girls. So the Boy Scouts have moved past it, but I feel like there's still an issue in this country where these private organizations, especially in the name of religion, are allowed to get away with discrimination. This woman lost her job because of the person she loves. It had nothing to do with her services and how great she may have been for some of these students.
And it's horrible.
And apparently she was a fantastic guidance counselor because students are getting together, you know, demanding her position be filled again with her back in her seat, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen because they stand by what they did, and they said that, you know, it's honoring what they're saying as role models for students, the personal conduct of every teacher, guidance counselor, and administrator and staff, both at school and away from school, must convey and be supportive of the teachings of the Catholic Church. These teachings include, but are not limited to, honoring the dignity of each human life from conception to natural death, care for God's creation, and the belief that all persons are called to respect human sexuality and its expression of the sacrament of marriage between a man and a woman as a sign of God's love and fidelity to his church.
Which to me is just ridiculous.
And that is why they stand by their decision to rip a woman away from her job and take her away from the student she's helped succeed and perhaps mentor. And navigate them to better their lives to their best of their ability.
That line in itself, right? The teachings include, but are not limited to, honoring the dignity of each human life from conception to natural death. That line in itself, you're honoring, right? The dignity of each human. This woman has a sense of dignity and self-respect to know who she truly is and to love the person that she loves. And again, this particular ruling just goes to show that sometimes they look at homosexuality from a sexual perspective when really it should be a human perspective, right? Mm-hmm. I have a right to love who I love. And there's a big difference between loving someone and being emotionally in love with someone and having sex tied to it. And I think that the decision here is again based on the sexual part of homosexuality, right? The act of engaging in sex with a fellow man or a fellow woman to them is what really the issue is. But love should never be an issue. Love is love.
You know my stance on this, but that being said, you know, it's interesting that you bring this up because just recently, what was it? So what's the date today? Yeah, it's today. So this article just came out. Pope Francis urges parents to accept their gay children.
Right, exactly.
And he literally said, parents of gay children should not condemn them, ignore their orientation, disown them, or kick them out of the house. Now, I think he's saying this, right? Well, first of all, I'm really confused by this Pope. I support him 100% when he does things like this, but then he goes and does other things that confuse me. But this religion and religion in itself is in a lot of ways pushing forward suicide and this dialogue that being gay is wrong. And that's where all of this anger and angst comes from, and bullying from these kids that are raised by these religious families that they believe that being gay is wrong. And so when they say that, or when it comes up, that's just what it is. And so then bullying happens, suicide happens. And I think what's happening in this conversation here with the Pope is he's trying to flip the script, like mm-hmm. we're talking about.
Yeah,
he's trying to change the conversation, because whether or not the Vatican will ever accept homosexuality as a member of, you know, the Catholic religion or the priesthood, you don't want people to commit suicide or hate themselves or die on your watch, or you don't want people that innately love their children push them away for no reason. Mm-hmm. And so, like, this whole religion issue is like, it's like this Pope is, I'm just so confused. Like one day he's saying one thing, the next day he's saying this. But when he says good things, it's like super powerful and crazy.
Well, you got to understand too that the Pope himself is like a king, right? It's like a monarchy. You have a monarchy, you've got your king, you've got your bishops who are like parliament. And so when you think about monarchies, like, for example, in England, they have a constitutional monarch that says, you know, this is what we believe, et cetera, et cetera. They're the head of the Church of England. And then you have your parliament that sort of kind of makes the laws and rules, et cetera. It's a little different, right, in the realm of the See of Rome and who's at the top. And, of course, obviously the Pope makes a lot of decisions, and a lot of the things that he does do go. They happen, but he still has to account and answer to people that are part of a group of people that elected him, right? And
but then you see this poor teacher that's going to get potentially fired.
She's already been fired. The students were calling for her to get her job back.
And so here you have the Vatican, who I believe in some way they're related. In some way, there's a connection there, right? And you have the Pope saying, don't condemn dialogue. Give the child space so she or he can express themselves. Mm-hmm. And he urged parents to not respond with silence. Ignoring children with tendencies shows lack of motherhood and fatherhood. He went on to say that the child has the right to family and not the family throwing him out.
Absolutely.
And but then you have this educational school kicking somebody out because they're gay.
And that's what, when I was reading this, all I thought of back was when the Russian Federation put in these anti-gay propaganda laws. And at that point, they were hounding throughout schools and searching for teachers and guidance counselors. And if you were found to be gay or sympathetic to what they would call like the gay cause, you would be removed from your job. And I'm thinking, I'm like, this is the United States of America. And the actions that take place in totalitarian Russia are happening,
mirroring exactly what's happening.
Absolutely.
Here in this case.
And I think it's disgusting. This woman was working hard to better the lives of every student that she was able to meet. And they're removing her from the position because of her orientation.
I say it all the time. I mean, separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a Catholic school, but this is also happening in America. And this is not
where we allow laws to protect these archbishops and these. The school from doing what they did.
And it's not right. All right. Well, listen, on that note, that was a great conversation. We'll definitely pick up after a conversation with AJ Gibson. We're going to play some music. And when we come back, the author sits with us. Well, actually doesn't sit with us. He chats with us here on his new book and all the good stuff that he does. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, from the break. That was Despacito by the incredible Matthew Olson, also known as the shirtless violinist.
You don't want to bring us in with the opener at all? No. What?
No. We're good with that. We're good with that. But anyway.
She's nasty.
Yes, she is. Every time I hear that song now, though, I think of Randy Rainbow's new version of Despacito. Have you heard it? Have you seen it?
No.
It's hysterical. And I just pee my pants every time I see it. He's talking about Trump and all. You know, he does
amazing things. Your bill must be astronomical.
But either way. Anyway, but we do have a guest. So joining us now is AJ Gibson. He's the author of Flipping the Script, Bouncing Back from Life's Rock Bottom Moments. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I appreciate your time.
Oh, anytime. We appreciate yours. Are you kidding me? It's amazing to have you on board with us to chat about your new book. The book is releasing in September, correct?
Yes, September 15th we come out.
All right. So why don't we just start things off by you telling us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, and then we can jump into the book and talk about that.
Sure. In 1980, I'm just kidding. No.
can I take a pause for a second because we haven't introduced ourselves to AJ? Oh. Hi, AJ. I'm Nick.
I'm Tom.
Nice to meet you.
I'm Chris.
Nice to meet you all. I have an uncle named Tom and a sister named Chris. I think I hooked up with a Nick one time. So there you go.
It was probably terrible.
I'm sure you did. And it was probably terrible.
I would consider this a hardship. So just saying.
No, yeah. So I grew up in a really small town in Ohio. And a very conservative Christian upbringing, Republican, you know, standard Midwest upbringing. And I moved out to New York City after I graduated from Ohio State about 13 years ago, actually. And then 12 years ago, I moved out to here to L.A. Back in 2011, I did a reality show on ABC called Expedition Impossible with my ex-boyfriend and my sister. It was a Mark Burnett show. It got canceled after one season, but that opportunity got me in front of some executives, you know, at a major network. And Mark Burnett in particular took an interest in me. And we were working on developing a show together. That fell apart because of a little show he was doing at the time that just launched called The Voice. So I blame Christina Aguilera. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's terrible. I can't believe she did that to you.
And she's since moved on, so whatever. At the advice of Mark Burnett, I decided to start taking some hosting classes and eventually became a television host, which is what I've been doing for the last few years. I work, I had a TV show on Fox for a while called Hollywood Today Live. I appear regularly on Wendy Williams, Access Hollywood, The Talk. I've been around for a minute, and I do a lot of major red carpets for Dick Clark Productions. So I do like the Golden Globes, American Music Awards, Billboard Music Awards. I do them all. So that's sort of what I've been doing the last few years. And then just recently I decided to write a book. I decided to sort of pivot a little bit and kind of follow a passion project in mind, which is flipping the script.
So can I ask really quick? So you brought up Hollywood Today Live. So I was watching some YouTube videos of you the other day, and you were talking about this show as it relates to your book.
Yes.
So you left the show unexpectedly, correct?
Oh, yeah. I was fired.
Okay. And is that part of the reason why you decided to write this book?
Yeah, it was one of, so this book really kicks off with three rock bottom moments that took place in my life over about a 15-month period. And the book actually opens up, the opening chapter of the book is Fired AF. And I talk about, I talk about the experience of, you know, working my entire life towards this dream. I always knew I wanted to be in Hollywood and I wanted to be notable. I wanted to be on television. I thought I wanted to be a celebrity or whatever it was. I didn't really understand it until I experienced it. And I got this show that had started off as a little internet show. And we got picked up. We did a test run on Fox. We got picked up. And then after a few months, you know, there's a lot of pressure, especially in daytime television on a major network, to get big ratings. And I took one day off of work to fly home for an Ohio State football game. And I said, hey, why don't you bring Ross Matthews? And I love him. He's fantastic. He's been on the show a few times. In my head, naively, I'm thinking he's another gay guy. At least there'll still be like a gay presence on the show for the day that I'm gone. It's great. And then he took my job a couple weeks later.
Wait, so
I love him so much, apparently.
So are you still close with him?
No, see, Ross and I were never, I would never say we were close. We were always acquaintances. He'd been on the show a few times. We have a lot of friends in common, but he and I were never actually friends. However, I'm a huge fan of his. I think he's wildly talented. I love his passion for fashion and for style and for entertainment and pop culture and for the LGBTQ plus community. I love all of that. I just don't love that he took my job.
I don't think anybody loves when someone takes your job.
Period. I still blame Christina Aguilera for that as well.
Well, Christina and Ross can both live on an island together. No. It turned out, and as the book unfolds, you find out that it was actually a blessing in disguise. But at the time, the small kid from Ohio, you know, was trying to figure out what Hollywood and what the industry meant, and it was devastating for me. Oddly enough, I hated the show. I did not enjoy it. It got old really quickly. The grind of having to go in and talk about, you know, the Kardashians for an hour every day live on television wasn't what I expected.
Welcome to my life.
Yeah, but I real talk, I was just watching last week's episode of Keeping Up the Kardashians a little bit ago in my room. But I love them. But I got to a point where I felt like I wasn't doing enough with my voice and with my career. And I was taken out of a situation that I was too afraid to walk away from on my own. So that's that.
So tell me a little bit about what, I mean, so clearly this book is about, you know, coming back from rock bottom. So tell me a little bit about, like, what this book means to you and why it's so important to get out there.
I call this book my love letter to humanity, and in particular to the LGBTQ plus community. There's a lot of, my heart comes through on every page of this book. I hope that's my goal. I went through some stuff, and as we all do, especially those coming from small towns and the whole coming out process and everything that's involved in that. So oftentimes people look at like the one singular moment that, you know, a person in our community comes out, but it's really so much more than that. It's years, sometimes decades of hiding and pivoting and always sort of like measuring people and measuring every room that you're in. And that's really true for me. So instead of just telling the story of the day I came out, which I do tell in the book, I talk about young AJ. I talk about the experience of being, you know, in a very Catholic, very Republican family, and navigating that, and also being an athlete, a really great athlete through high school and college. And at the time, back in the 1990s, people's brains couldn't comprehend that those things could coexist. Mm-hmm, right. So I really kind of go there and all of that. I talk about my Catholic upbringing. I talk about the 15 years I was like kind of an atheist. And then I talk about my Christian faith now, which is at the center of my universe today. And I know that's not an easy conversation for, especially for many in our community, because there's so much hurt and pain attached to that. And I've experienced all of that, and I've come back from it. And I still go in and out of that. Those emotions are hard to sort of leave in the past, but I tried to write about them in a way that was true and authentic to me and to my personal experience, hoping that others will be able to relate to that and maybe draw something from it.
So I want to get back to this whole religion thing, because we were actually talking about that on the first half, about to half, say half that. Of the show. But yeah. So my question right now, though, is, have you always been an out public figure, or did you have to come out? What was that process? How was that for you?
That's really interesting, because I didn't think I was never out. Like, I came out when I was 20. So that was, I mean, 18 years ago I came out, and I just sort of assumed everybody always knew. I didn't hide it. But I didn't actively talk about it. And that's a really important distinction, I think, especially within our community, especially for those who have platforms where they can sort of push the movement forward a little bit.
Which and you kind of do.
well, now, yes. And I didn't realize that in my head, and I still struggle with this idea of notoriety or celebrity or any of those sorts of labels, because they don't make sense to me, and I certainly don't consider myself those things. However, I realize that I do have platforms and opportunities where I can have conversations that are important. So a great example, and I talk about this in the book, it's one of my favorite chapters, it's towards the end, it's this last year at the Billboard Music Awards, my boyfriend Emil and I, who have been together for 6 years, our anniversary is actually the day my book comes out, which is exciting.
Excellent. Congrats.
Thank you, total coincidence. Not the relationship, the dates. although that was kind of a coincidence too. But anyways, I decided this year at the Billboard Music Awards that I was going to walk the carpet with him. And I'd never done that before. He also works as an entertainment host. He works for a digital network called Clever TV, and they're global. They're massive on YouTube. They're one of the top providers of entertainment and pop culture news for like millennials. And are you getting ready to go to work? He's actually here right now. He's going to come kiss me goodbye right now. This is very important.
That's okay. I want to see him.
Oh, yay.
Hi.
Yay.
I love it. He's my heart and soul. But so I decided that I've been doing these red carpets, these major red carpets for years. And I always felt like, well, I'm the least famous, obviously, of all these people. They have more social media followers, or they have, you know, platinum selling albums or whatever. Emmys, and I don't have those things, so I always just really diminished myself and minimized myself, even though I was the only one getting hired back for every single one of these red carpets. I was the guy who was like the lead, took point on all these carpets, because I'm actually a host for a living, where many of these others are influencers or actors or musicians, and they just kind of do this on the side. Well, I decided, I'd seen enough of them walk the carpets with their significant others, that I decided I wanted to do that. I wanted to know what that felt like. And I told him a few weeks in advance so we could get our outfits together, because it's really important.
Obviously.
And I had said something to one of my producers, Dick Clark, and she said, I can't tell you you can do it, but I can't stop you either. So I don't know anything. Because they're very particular. These carpets are not easy to get onto. I can walk the carpet, but to bring him on was a whole different story, and I never attempted it. So he was terrified. He was honestly, I thought he was going to shit his pants before we walked out there.
Wear a dark suit.
He did. Luckily, he did. I was wearing off-white linen, so I had to stay clean. But so we're getting ready to walk up to the entrance to the step and repeat. And these are pretty like intense, high-pressure situations. These big ones are no joke. And I held his hand tightly, and we walked up to the publicist, and I didn't even ask. I just stood there and kind of looked off and ignored them. And I was like, we're getting on this carpet together. And they never stopped me. Like in my head, I thought, no, they're going to be like, no, who is this? You're not big enough. You're not important enough. And they didn't. They walked us right onto the carpet. And we were holding hands. And I had decided ahead of time that I was going to kiss him on the carpet. So I warned him. Because I think representation matters. I think it's really important. I think visibility is super important. And this was our chance to be visible in a way that we never had been before. So we walk out on the carpet. I look over him, and I told him ahead of time, I said, when I look at you, and I'm going to look away from the camera and wink with my left eye, when I wink at you, lean in and kiss me. He's like, okay. So he's terrified. It's really like pretty nerve wracking to kiss in front of like the world, but we did it. And the moment we did it, and this shows me that there's been so much progress in our country in this one particular area. The moment we did it, the paparazzi went nuts. The press pool, the photographers started yelling, boys, boys, over here, fellas, fellas, one more time. Can you give us one more kiss? AJ, kiss him again. So it turned into this sort of frenzy. And it was exhilarating, and it was affirming, and it was empowering in a way that I'd never experienced before. And low key, I was kind of like, we need to be more visible. I got a book coming out. I need to raise my profile. I'm thinking like, you know, as like a publicist.
Yeah.
But also I'm thinking about all the young AJs.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And Sarah's and Allie's and Brian's across the world who have maybe not seen themselves represented yet. And we're an interracial relationship, and he is the son of a reverend from down south. There's a lot of layers to our relationship, mm-hmm. that I wanted to show. And immediately it got picked up by People, by Variety, by the Huffington Post, by Teen Vogue, by Cosmopolitan. And we made all these cutest couples of the Billboard or of the Billboard Music Awards lists. And we were the only same-sex couple, and we're the only interracial couple, and that really matters. And I didn't realize the power of it until that day, and from that point forward I've not turned back. And it's been interesting to see how many people from around the world have reached out and shared these heartfelt messages with us, and how few people realized, one, that I was even gay, and two, that he and I are in a relationship put together. Because if you know me, and I'm like, I'm as gay as the day is long in my mind. So I just assume everybody knows.
Yeah.
But people don't. People don't know things until you show them and tell them. And so I'm really proud of that decision. And we've been very visible ever since. If you notice, if you go look at like my Instagram, for instance, you'll notice from that day, all of a sudden, about a half or a third of all my photos are now with him.
Yeah, you were at something with him earlier today, weren't you? Some festival or something?
He's
stalking your Insta.
No.
We're friends now, watch out.
Trying to think of what was posted today on our Instagram. Because low-key, like, we bank things that are, like, weeks old or months old.
Oh,
I do the same thing.
He posted, okay, so he posted today a picture of us lying in bed in Puerto Vallarta, which is where we were about a week or so ago. We were on a vacation there. Oh, and my last post was us lying on the beach in Puerto Vallarta. Oh. We were there on an influencer trip recently, and we posted a lot of photos together. Most of them were basically nude in, but it's funny to see how many more likes we get on social media when we post together. And that wasn't the case just a few years ago. Things are turning. This younger generation, they're definitely changing the game, I think, which is really awesome and beautiful.
It's going to be amazing to see. I mean, you know, it's a generational thing, right? Because you go through some of the try to understand the scope of where people prior to the millennials come from, right? Like when you look at traditionalists, people who fit into that type of category, or when you look at the baby boomers and how their thoughts and views slowly start to shift over to, you know what, this gay thing may not be so bad.
Right.
But it's the millennials that are really going to be out there and saying, you know, these are the people that are going to start, you know, running for office. These are the people that are going to start making our laws soon, that are going to start building the nation that we want to see, right, eventually get to. And when you think about the subject of homosexuality or being out or being open, I think that it will take the Xennials and millennials to really spearhead this effort that we've been going through the past, you know, 40, 50 years to really shift it, you know, tenfold forward to a point where it will be okay at some point for us to hold hands walking down a street that may not be Christopher Street in New York City or the Castro.
And we feel comfortable.
And we don't have to worry about being victimized for loving someone.
And it is happening. If you go look across the country with the primaries that have been going on, people that are part of the LGBTQ plus community are winning their primaries. In Vermont, you look at for the Democrats, a transgender woman won the nomination for the gubernatorial.
Proud of you.
I'm proud of you.
Exactly.
I can't say
But it is happening. It's taken many, many years, and visibility with like what you're doing is helping that.
So I hope. I'm sorry. I want to get back. I know we keep going on tangents. This is gay talk. This is what gay talk is.
I love a good tangent.
But so I'm really interested in so many things about you. So we're gonna take it back a little bit. We're gonna talk about these layers of your relationship. I want to talk about how being in an interracial relationship has affected you, has affected your partner, and what it means beyond the LGBTQ plus community for you as an individual, because that's like, especially being so visible, that's such a huge statement and so important for not only our community, but the entire African-American community.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Our story is really interesting. I met him hosting a show with him about 6.5 years ago, and he was in the closet and never been in a relationship. And it started off as I was sort of almost a mentor to him, and because I'm almost 10 years older, and I was really attracted to something about him at first. I was attracted to his heart and his spirit, and I loved sort of being able to help guide him out of the closet, I guess you could say. Eventually, it sort of shifted, and it became a thing that I did not expect it to be. Our relationship now has evolved into such a beautiful thing. He's such a rock and such a source of strength for me. We have had to lean into each other a lot. You talk about the interracial thing. It's been interesting because we, as a couple, I think we've gotten so close because for so many reasons, I've never really fully felt accepted by my community as a gay man because I have my Christian faith. I also feel like I've never been fully accepted by my Christian faith because I am a gay man. Oh. And then on top of that, I come from a town where there are no black people. And I'm now in a long-term relationship with a black man who is the son of a reverend from the deep South. My boyfriend is a junior. He has his father's name. He was expected to go into the church and continue that legacy and went to a Methodist school and college and then chose to move to LA and sort of pursue this dream. And then on top of that, there is definitely a culture, sadly, I hate to say it, but in West Hollywood in particular, there's definitely some racism within the LGBTQ plus community towards people of color. In our community, it's very rampant. There are little subcultures within our community, but the highlighted blonde young boy, or like the daddy with the high tops and the jean shorts and the tank, you know, that look, those are sort of like the dominant sort of subcultures within the LGBTQ plus community as far as gay men go here in West Hollywood. So it's been interesting to go out with him. He talks about he's gorgeous. Like, he's a beautiful man.
Oh, I've seen pictures.
Well, yeah, he's easy to look at. But when we go to West Hollywood, he mentioned this to me just the other day, because we were there for a friend of ours invited us to a drag show. It was the worst drag show I've ever seen in my life, but we were there to support that.
Just saying.
We need terrible. To book that drag queen next week.
Yeah, I think they were rookies. But he said, it's like, it's so interesting to me. He's like, because when we come here, I don't exist. Nobody looks at me. Everybody like gawks at you, and nobody sees me. But then if he goes to like the gym, or goes to the gym in a different neighborhood, he's like hot shit, and I'm invisible. So it really has been interesting to see where, like, in certain pockets of LA, where maybe somebody, if we go downtown, he's much more likely to get seen than he is. But if we go to Atlanta, all of a sudden he's a hot commodity there as well. He has his hometown in Atlanta. So it's interesting to see what happens as a relationship, depending on where we are at the moment.
Right.
And it's been something that has been enlightening to me. We go to church. We go to a predominantly black church now. We just switched a few months back. And all of our friends that we go with, they're three black females who are just incredibly, incredibly intelligent, successful, proud women. And our brunches turn into hours and hours of bottomless mimosas and talks about discussions about what it means to be black or to be white or to be straight or to be gay in America right now. And we're at an inflection point where these discussions are being had that are difficult, but important. And just yesterday we had one where I felt like I was being singled out a little bit. That sort of white privilege, white guilt sort of thing that kind of comes to a crossroads sometimes and makes you feel like you're being singled out.
Yeah.
When in fact you're just maybe possibly being educated. Mm-hmm. And we had one of those moments just yesterday. And things that are so clear to me are also clear to him, but from a completely different point of view. And that's been really, actually really beautiful for me to spend so much time intimately with somebody of a completely different upbringing and of a skin tone. I hate to say race because we're all the same race, but of a different skin tone than me and a different reality than me. And it's really, really helped me to not only figure out who he is, but to figure out who I am and who we are as a couple, and to realize how impactful that can be. We follow a lot of gay couples on like Instagram, and we love seeing like their travels and like the way that they sort of like represent themselves, but we don't see a lot of interracial gay couples.
Yeah, you're
really.
Right.
And so we're like, you know what? This is an opportunity for us. This is an area where if we are comfortable with this, and we are now, we're 6 years in, we're locked down, we're solid. If we're comfortable with this, not only it's a great opportunity to get free trips to Mexico like last week, but more importantly, it's an opportunity to show diversity and to show a different option to people around the world, and to help them just to see. It wasn't that long ago that, first of all, we wouldn't be allowed to get married because of our sexuality, and not long before that, we couldn't get married because of the color of our skin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So these are still pretty new things to most people, and we forget sometimes that, you know, we live in a bubble here in Los Angeles, but we try to stay keenly aware of that, because growing up in the Deep South and growing up in Ohio like I have, the two of us are very aware of, like, what the rest of the country can be like.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned, you were having conversations with these three women around, you know, brunch, and that you at some point in time were made aware of, or at least you became aware of your white privilege. Mm-hmm. So when you realize that at that point mm-hmm. in time, and it goes through your head, oh, I may be doing something not right here, and you check yourself. What's the first thing that you do when you realize that your white privilege is really speaking, rather than you being understanding of the situation and the fact that they come from a completely different perspective than you do?
Mm-hmm. what do I do, or what do I actually do, or what do I try to do? Because those are two different answers.
Well, let's start with what do you try to do, and then move into what you actually do.
Yeah, so I try to just shut up and listen. So I think it's important. Mm-hmm. In a similar way to, you know, women don't need things mansplained to them. Members of the you know, the African American community, or just people of color in general, do not need white people to tell them what it means to be a person of color or what their experience is or should be. So I try to just get quiet and listen. I do that more often than not, and I'm proud of that. Every now and then, that thing inside gets stirred up and I go on the defense. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you're not understanding me. Let me repeat myself 100 different ways to show you why what you think about me or what I just said right now is not true. And I think that's often, I think that is what a lot of white people tend to do when we feel like we're like, well, we're not racist. We're just trying to explain why we feel this way or said this thing or did this thing, right? But the problem with that is oftentimes as we're trying so hard to explain, we're not listening. And we're not trying to empathize or understand the other point of view, the other perspective.
Because we're right? On the defense.
Of course. Because it feels like, and I understand this, this is the blessing and the curse of growing up in a small conservative town and living in this crazy liberal city now. I get both sides to a degree. That doesn't mean I agree with them both. It means I can understand, though, when people like where I come from, they feel like white people are being persecuted for everything. They feel like Christians are being persecuted for everything. They feel like white people are being left behind. They feel like we're being punished for the sins of our great, great, great grandfathers. That's how they feel. When in reality,
it's we're equality.
Still, yes. Well, but equality to a white person feels like they're losing something.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
That makes sense. Right.
Yeah. And so we have to remind ourselves sometimes that we have experienced a certain level of privilege. And that's definitely a trigger word for a lot of white people, because my sister and I got into this a couple years ago, and I love her to death and I love her heart and I know what she meant. But the word privilege really, really kind of struck a chord with her, because she's like, you think I'm privileged? I've struggled my entire life to provide for my kids. And I get that. So it's semantics, I think. What privilege actually means to me is that we've grown up under a system, white people, under a system that is tilted in our favor, mm-hmm. right? Like, we've been set up to succeed, and we've had an expectation of ourselves that no matter what, we'll just find a way to succeed. And we see ourselves represented in film and television and music, and we see it, you know? And that's the white side of me talking, not the gay side of me. They both live here and also here, mm-hmm. right? So as a white man, I get that. I get what it's like, but also I've always had this sort of thing inside me. It's like, but I don't see my gay side being represented, and that's the part that I feel like I need represented. That's the part I identify with more intimately. And so it's interesting. I try, back to your question, I try to listen. And then I try to explain, and sometimes I try to over-explain.
Yeah.
I think that explanation of privilege was very well said, because I am one of those, I'm like your sister, I am one of those people that my blood starts to boil when someone mm-hmm. says, you're white privilege to me, because mm-hmm. I feel the same exact way. I feel like, well, sure. No, I'm pretty much, I have to bust my ass for anything mm-hmm. I want if I want to be successful. It doesn't have to do with my skin tone, but I get it. There, you know, there's more exposure, and it is really tilted in our favor as a white person.
Yeah.
So
I feel like we need to drop that word, maybe, like find a different word, because that word is such a trigger for so many yeah. people.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's become very prominent in the past, like 2 years. It's like everything is privilege, privilege, privilege. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
I wonder why
we need to find a new word now. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Granted, it's very important, right? Because calling out such privilege needs to be done. It is a very important, it plays a very important role in educating people and telling them this is why, right? Mm-hmm.
But you also have to look at, too, our president, right? I don't know who you voted for. I'm assuming you didn't vote for Trump.
But... I would cut off my left arm for Hillary.
I'm voting for her
in 2020. Please. She's running again.
I hope not.
But let's just say, like, so we look at, you say in the past 2 years, right? We look at the word privilege. You look at Trump and you look at his family. Mm-hmm. That is a privileged family. And now you're seeing all of these tax cuts to the privileged. That's why that word is now so evident again. We have privileged people running our country and literally running us to the ground. So,
well, they don't understand the consequences of their actions. I mean, you've got all these.
They don't care.
Massive companies making billions and billions of dollars because of these tax cuts, and the average Joe Schmo, you know, probably got about $400.
Well, they don't know the consequences of their actions because there are no consequences.
Exactly. Right.
I mean, they're so shielded from the reality of what it means to be an everyday American that they don't even see the consequences. So in reality, they don't exist to them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
So, all right. So let's go back to the book because that's important. All right.
There's that tangent you love so much.
Yeah. What book?
First of all right. So, so the book is called Flipping the Script, right? And you talk about a lot of your hardships that you went through. You said it was spanning anywhere between 15 to 18 months period in your life. Mm-hmm. And then you're talking about, you highlight the importance of knowing that you're not alone. You're not alone in your struggle. So can we talk about a little bit about why you want to communicate that message to people and how important is it for people to realize that, you know, you're not alone in this fight?
Yeah. Even beyond like being alone in this fight, humans were created to connect and to live in community with one another. We just were. And that doesn't necessarily mean like in a two-person committed relationship or in a traditional family or whatever, but we were created to be in community with one another, to find like our tribes and to feel like we have a connection to people, right? And what happens so often is that we get isolated and we isolate ourselves by not sharing our stories because we think in our minds we're the only person who's ever gone through X, Y, or Z. And the only person who's ever experienced loss or judgment or failure or fear in a certain way. When in reality, we all experience all of those things all of the time.
Every day.
But every day. But, and then we make assumptions on people. And I used to get really, really frustrated because people would always tell me, especially where I come from a very small rural town. And the concept of Hollywood is something they can't even wrap their brains around. Mm. And it's just not their reality. They're farmers. They're, you know, factory workers. And I used to get hurt. My feelings would be hurt. And people would say, oh, you're so lucky. You're so lucky. And I'd be like, are you fucking kidding me? Like what? That luck had nothing to do with this. I bust my butt so hard. And you don't know how much the struggle is real. You don't know what kind of debt I have. You don't know how many times I've been told no. How many times I've been told I'm too tall or I'm too gay or I'm too straight or whatever it's been, I'm not talented enough. I was told when I got let go of Hollywood Today Live that I was all icing and no cake, that I was basically shallow and couldn't keep a conversation of substance. And that broke my heart. It really, really rocked my confidence for a while. And I write about that in the book. And so we make these assumptions of other people that their life must be easier than ours. Because we look at social media or whatever it is, and we see the highlights.
How's that bitch always on vacation?
I know, right? So you don't even know. We go on a vacation for like 3 or 4 days, and we post about it for the next 2 months. I'm always on vacation. I'm probably laying on my couch half the time, eating a bag of Cheetos, watching like Real Housewives of Atlanta, and like posting, oh, throwback Thursday. I remember this time we were at a beach 3 years ago. Like, whatever. Half of it's so like manufactured and fake. We try to keep ours pretty real. And we don't try to like, I'm not all about like the deep inspirational quotes every time I post something, but I do try to put out some like positive content every chance I get. But I got frustrated that people always tell me how lucky I was. I'm like, I'm not lucky. Like, I'm not like, I wish, I tell my sister this all the time, who lives in Kentucky, my older sister. I'm like, you have no clue how many times I'm like, I wish I had 3 kids and a house and, you know, a 9-to-5 job. And like, I love that you have a dog and a backyard and like, a gazebo where you can sit out in the summertime and get eaten alive by mosquitoes, but whatever, you have the option to go up there. Like, but I don't have any of those. I live in an apartment in Los Angeles on the 10th floor that costs $3,000 some dollars a month, you know, for 1,000 square feet. But this is where I've chosen to be, and this is where my career has taken me. Mm-hmm. But it's always so easy to say the grass is greener, but in reality, can't we all just say, look, we all have our shit. Let's find the common humanity between all of us. Speaking on the political thing, I can tell you guys talk about politics a lot on the show, which I love. But like, I come from a family that's predominantly Republican, and my close family is not. But my godparents, aunts, uncles, nobody my generation, all the cousins are hardcore Democrats. But like, a lot of people that I really care about and love, who are really good, solid, salt of the earth people, are diehard Republicans and support him. I don't say it, Lord Voldemort.
It.
Yeah. And I really struggled with that for the first year or so of the presidency. And I was shutting people down and blocking everybody on Facebook and just not talking to people. But I realized that that actually doesn't do anything. Yeah. That just further divides and further divides. And so I tried to write this book in a way, although I do mention Hillary in it, I'm not going to lie, because I love her. But I too try to write this book in a way that is inclusive of everyone, because I don't believe that as a gay man, I can ask for inclusiveness when I'm not willing to offer it to others, even if I don't agree with them. However, I do draw a line when all of a sudden their hatred starts to take away my rights. Then I draw a hard line.
Of course.
But for a lot of these issues, it's just, it comes down to semantics, or it comes down to difference of opinion, or it comes down to ignorance oftentimes. Yeah.
No,
and people just...
Sorry, it's actually really funny. I feel like we do. We walk a really thin, thin, fine line, because we are this community that's preaching visibility and togetherness and community and accepting people for what they believe in and who they are. Yet there are times, especially right now, where we're like, I don't even want to talk to you. I can't even look at you. But
yeah.
But like you said, it's like we have to take it in and give it a second, because otherwise we're doing exactly what they're right. doing, and we're not giving mm-hmm. them the space to explain themselves. And yes, yeah, and maybe they need the space for us to educate them.
It's easier said than done, but it's so important.
Yeah.
I read a book years ago, a couple of books that really sort of hit me at a point in my life where I was really struggling with my sexuality and struggling to sort of bring my parents along on the journey. Two of them, one of them is called The Velvet Rage. And then I read another book called Love is an Orientation. And Love is an Orientation was written by a straight pastor who decided to move to Chicago and live in Boys Town for 1 year. And go out and minister in the community and go to the clubs and go to the bars and just be there and experience what that life actually looked like. Mm-hmm. And the way he writes about the importance of communities of faith reaching out to the LGBTQ plus community, because it needs to come from them. It needs to come from them. They are the ones who've hurt and divided so many of our brothers and sisters for so many years. It needs to come from them. So in the same way that that makes sense in that context, I realized that there are issues where, as a gay man, I need to reach out. I need to be open to having discussions that maybe I don't agree with or that I'm comfortable with, because really at the end of the day, people really just want to be seen and heard. And if you can listen to somebody and let them know they're being seen and valued, you're much more likely to get them to change a viewpoint on something. I remember once I heard a pastor in my old church talk about, oftentimes it feels like, and I feel like this is a good summary of what it feels like to be a member of our community. You might have the truth on your side, and you might be standing up against 1 million people who are shouting and yelling something opposing to what it is that you believe, right? So you have a couple of options. Our instinct is to try to yell to get our point across, to shout, to try to like overcome all of this and say, no, I know that I have the truth on my side. You're wrong. Listen to me, right? Which is what I think sometimes we do in our community. But the actual way to change those hearts and to motivate them to take a different viewpoint, as opposed to standing and screaming at them, simply turn your back, walk the other direction, and lead them by example. And so this book for me is my attempt to sort of lead by example. I'm not trying to convert everybody, but I know that my words will. if I'm open to have conversations.
So I'm not saying we're looking for a fourth host on the show, but I think he would be perfect.
But I wanted to mention this. So I want to go back to, you know, the comment that you made about all icing and no cake by this particular network. They must have not had their baker come into work that day. That's all I have to say.
I love you. I love you. Snaps.
The baker was out. The baker was out because there's definitely a lot of cake in there.
So, so I want to talk a little bit more about the book before we have to round this up soon. So there are kind of like four groups to this book. So living through hardships, not knowing you're not alone, turning bad situations around, and feeling empowered. So I want you to talk to us a little bit about breaking that down for us. How did you structure the book? Why are these things so important? And how does that like relate to?
Yeah. Well, the books came out of me so organically. It was the craziest process. I've never written a blog in my life until I wrote this book. Like I'm not a writer. But I just felt, I always knew I had a book inside of me. I have many books inside of me, but this is the first one that came out. And when I started writing it, when I got my publishing deal last January, my editor, God love him, he said, just write. Just let it all come out of you. All of your emotions. Don't stop anything. Just let it flow. We'll figure out the structure later. I was like, oh, okay. And I would have a meltdown. About every week or two, I'd have a meltdown. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I want to delete everything. And he was like, just keep writing. So I would do that. And then eventually, I got to the point where I had some sort of a manuscript that he said, go ahead and send it to me, and my team of editors and I will look over this and we'll figure out the storyline. Because there was no like rhyme or reason. They were like standalone. Basically, it was a bunch of blog posts, standalone chapters that made no sense. And I said, I kept coming back to this idea that, first of all, we do not live linear lives. This idea that we live forwards and backwards is this social construct that we've been taught, but it's not true. It doesn't really exist. Time does not exist in a linear fashion. We live this way, right? We expand constantly, forward, backwards, up, down, everywhere. That's how humans live. If something happens to you right now and you have an instant reaction to it, you're not having that reaction based on something directly behind you in a straight line. You're having that reaction based on a lot of different things that have happened to you over your lives that have caused you specifically, as one in 7 billion people on this planet, to have that very specific reaction, right? So in that same context, our lives are lived the same way. We're constantly pulling from different experiences that have happened throughout our time. So I wanted the book to reflect that. God bless you.
I said it under my breath.
If you don't believe in God, that's okay too. I don't care. But so I wanted the book to really reflect that. So the book is broken down into scenes. It's written as a film. I work in Hollywood. I interview celebrities and actors. So that's sort of the play there. And it bounces all over the place. It starts out with these three stories and that 15-month period, but then it bounces all. Chapter four goes to it's the making of AJ. I was a little boy. I was 4 years old. It jumps all over the place because I didn't want to tell stories in a straight line and lose the actual story. Right. So I just kept telling these stories that mattered to me, things that came to me. I cut a couple chapters and I used them as blog posts. I cut a couple and deleted them completely. And then I found new stories. And what I found through the process is that this book really is a microcosm of my entire life. I didn't know the ending of it until the moment I knew the ending of it. And I think that's so true about our lives. Like, we never know how things are going to turn out until they turn out. Like, we think we know all the time. We think we know what tomorrow is going to bring. We think we know when, like, oh, I'm running out of options. And all of a sudden, boom, something happens. You get a call or an email from out of nowhere and things turn around, right?
Yeah.
And that's really what this book was. I honestly, genuinely, and it's so beautiful to me that it actually happened this way. But I wanted writing this book I wanted readers to experience me going on the journey of actually writing this book and flipping my personal script. I wanted to rewrite my story physically and literally, and I did. And then the way the book concludes is tragic and also beautiful, in a way that rocked me, but in a way that, when it happened, when the ending became clear to me, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that God, the universe, whatever was in play, was saying, okay, here it is.
Yeah.
This is what I wanted to get you to. There you are. Here's your ending. And it was so profound and powerful. And I hope that comes through in in my writing, because I just love people. I love people, and I'm tired of seeing people not live to their potential and not realize their awesomeness.
You know what's really powerful for me about this? You know, I feel like we haven't seen a lot of autobiographies, because this is kind of an autobiography.
Sure.
from gay men who are visible in the community, who if I was not out of the closet, because I came out, 16? So if I was 14, 15, and I had a chance to read this book and be like, oh, wow, it is hard, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. You're giving so much to the community through this book, because finally kids that haven't heard the stories from other gay men finally have somebody that's telling their story. And that's one of the most beautiful things, I think, about this book.
You're speaking to my heart. I appreciate that so much, because it's the importance of sharing our stories, every single one of us, everybody. Especially as gay men, we get to a certain age where we think like we've lived it. We've went through our crazy 20s and we're like, wow, and we did all whatever we're doing. And then we just kind of assume like, oh, they'll figure it out. I did.
Right.
But I had nobody. When I was a kid coming out, I had nobody. It took my dad 15 years to say the word gay back to me after I came out to him 18 years ago. So, and luckily, by the grace of God, I had a support system that through it all, even my family wasn't supporting me. I had friends who did.
Yep.
And I was lucky. And I have something inside me that has kept me going all these years. Not everybody has that. And if this book can be that thing that's lacking in some young person's life or any of any age, you know, because it doesn't necessarily, you don't have to be 14 or 15 years old to be struggling with like coming out. You could be 70, you know? So if this book speaks to anyone in that way, and I hope that it does, it will all be worth it.
So it's funny. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm monopolizing this conversation.
No,
guys.
I'm like, is he the only one that interviews people, guys? I don't know.
No, go right ahead.
No, I'm starting my own podcast, shameless plug, Love is Love podcast. Mm-hmm. And there's a quote that it just like popped into my head. I want to share it with you by a gentleman by the name of Tim Lewis. If our stories go untold, they go unheard. We go unknown, and the world's denied the privilege of being transformed by our powerful examples of resilience, beauty, love, and freedom. And I think that's exactly what your book is doing for our community.
I love that. I hope so. I really do. I can't tell you how much anxiety I have over this thing. I don't even have a physical copy of the book yet. Like, I don't have it yet. You know, it's being printed right now. And the amount of anxiety and the levels of sort of like, I don't know, it to put your personal story out there, to talk about the night I almost took my life, to talk about the struggles of coming out, to talk about these things and to put it out there and be like, look, I'm also I'm broke. I got some debt, like all these things that nobody talks about, to put them all out there. I'm really, especially when I've been, and maybe you guys can relate to this, but I feel like I've been judged my entire life by everybody, all of society, by religion, by everything. And so now this is sort of my way of saying, okay, look, you can't fucking judge me anymore because I already did it. I put it all out there. There's nothing left to judge. So now what? And I'm hoping that that transparency comes through and that it has a positive impact on people.
That's how I felt when I came out. I mean, I was 14 years old when I came out, and I felt that once I said it to myself, whatever the world thought, really, it was of no consequence, at least to me. And in reality, the only person I was looking for validation from was the only person that cared, and that was my mother. And once my mother said to me, you are my son, I love you any which way you are, that was a door for me to just go do whatever I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And I've been doing that ever since then.
For 5 years since then.
Huh?
For 5 years since then.
I love him.
Yeah, 5 years.
Boyfriend, move over. No. There's a lot of cake. See, they lied to him. I'm telling you, that bacon was not there. No, but for me, really, it was my mother saying to me, you're my son. Live your life. And once I got that validation, that was the only validation I needed. Really, what everybody else thought really wasn't of consequence to me. I moved. And I moved so fast. And things started to happen so quickly and so intensely.
She had a drag queen coming out the back of her convertible.
That's true. That's a story for another time. But it's,
haven't we all?
it's been a ride for me. And I think that, this show for us is our way of being able to speak to our community and say, this is what people are going through. Having guests like yourself, for example, showcasing a book with this type of material in it that could help so many is what we thought, you know, the show should be. It didn't always start off like this. Trust me. When we initially envisioned Gay Talk, we envisioned a bitchy, catty, very, oh, let's make fun of everyone. Let's go cut on this one. And slowly but surely, it's like, no, guys, what are we doing? You know, yeah. It's like, we can't do this. We get enough of this in our community as it is.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong.
It's fine. I can shade with the best of them.
Yes, we still have our moments. But and for I can the be most a bitch. Part, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can be a bitch, but for the most part, no, you know,
oh, yeah.
This is our way of being able to give back to our community in its simplest form.
Giving them a voice. I feel like also what's happened the last couple of years with like all of the Lord Voldemort stuff is what it's done is it really held up a mirror to all of us and. From whatever background we come from, we're able to look at ourselves and be like, okay, we've been this certain way for a while. That shit doesn't fly anymore. This is not the time to be catty and to be bitchy and just be sassy with each other. And to be like, sure, there's moments for that, but like now it's time to like work. It's time to share. It's time to express. It's time to hug each other. And it's time to come together and say, look, that we had the luxury of doing that. We had the privilege of doing that for a long time, you know, in our own way, because we didn't think we were ever going to have rights. Then we got them for a little bit, and now they're being threatened. And so now, the last couple of years, I think our community is like, okay, listen, we need to have some real conversations.
Yes.
And we need to push the envelope a little bit and get out of this pattern. Because really, so many of those things have been placed on us, right? That we're the witty ones, we're the sassy ones, we're the bitchy ones, we're the catty ones. Like we're super sexualized. Gay men are only
the pretty ones.
Of course, but like I don't wake up like this. I mean, sometimes I don't look that pretty, but we're so much more. Like we're not just these little boxes. We're not these little stereotypes. And I think it's important that we show people that, and it's important that we show people that we're not all icing. Yeah. You know, because I think society does look at the gay community, gay men in particular, as just icing. We're fun. Everybody likes to have like the fun gay friend to go to brunch with or to go shopping with, and that's great. And I love all of those things, but there are many more layers to all of us. And absolutely. I think it's important that we have those discussions.
Mine are red velvet.
Well, same.
So we're getting to that point. I think we should probably, you know, maybe wrap this up. Do you want to tell us a little bit about where people can find your book or find you on social media?
AJGibsonTV.com. That's my website. You can buy the book there. The direct link is AJGibsonTV.com/book. We're really pushing Amazon sales. We're available in Barnes & Noble. Around the world and other retailers. We're really pushing the Amazon sales right now. One, it's convenient. Two, I really want this thing to debut as a bestseller. I want to have that title for the rest of my goddamn life. That's what I want.
Oh, she's pre-ordering, so.
Yeah. I'm like, community, please, 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 please. And the sales have been great. Just today, a good friend of mine, you know Jonathan Bennett from Mean Girls?
Yes.
Yes.
Aaron Samuels, he's been a good friend of mine since high school. We came out together. He actually dragged me out of the closet in Toledo, Ohio in 1999. And he actually just reached out to me today. He's out here in LA. We're also both television hosts. He's still acting as well. But he dates a good friend of mine, James Vaughn, who's also like in the sphere. And he reached out to me today. He's like, what can I do to help? What do you need from me? How can I help make this thing go? And things like that just really, really matter to me because I did not know that anybody would give a fuck about my book. I honestly, every single day, I still feel like nobody's going to buy it. Even though I see the sales on Amazon and they're doing really well. It debuted at number one in LGBTQ autobiographies in the first hour. It went up about 2 months ago as a pre-order. So, I mean, that's amazing, but I had no idea. And he just reached out of the blue today. He's filming a film right now, I think in Vancouver or somewhere. And he just said, how can I help you? What can I do for you? So it means the world to me.
It's an amazing thing what you're doing, and we're super appreciative that, you know, you wanted to share this with us, so we thank you. We're going to do our best to, one, let people know about the book, what it's about, and obviously thanking you for joining us on today's episode to talk about it, because I think that, you know, hearing it from the horse's mouth usually is the best way for people to really understand what it's about, and I'm not calling you a horse.
You know, I was like, that's the rudest thing I've ever heard.
I do a really good horse horse impersonation, and I really almost wanted to do it right there, but I'm not going to because I'm classy and shit.
But again, so the book is available for pre-order, but it will be released September 15th, correct?
Yes. So they'll start shipping probably a couple days early so that you should receive them from Amazon. At least Amazon, I know for sure, does this on the 15th, Saturday the 15th. And then I'm going to be having a book launch party here in Los Angeles. I'm going home to Ohio to do a book signing and a launch party in my hometown because they love me, even though there might be a couple things in the book that they might not like reading, but whatever. They'll learn that after they buy the book.
Will you do anything on the East Coast?
Not yet. So I will be in New York. We're working those dates out right now to do a couple of appearances. We're doing a People Now TV show. I'm going out to do Sway Calloway's show on Sirius XM. We're working on Wendy Williams right now on the Today Show. But it's one of those things for some of those shows, even though I have relationships with all of them, Sway and People, those are easy. I can go on those tomorrow. But for some of those bigger shows like the Today Show, it really is a matter of the book coming out first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like they like to see that the book is out and the book is doing something before they bring me on. So we're kind of waiting on those right now, but I probably will be out there late September, early October in New York City, at least.
Okay.
Where are you guys? I don't even know where you're located.
We're in Connecticut. So we're like an hour and 20 minutes away from the city.
Yeah, totally. So well, if I make it up.
If I make it up
in New York City for sure.
Yeah. Well, we're going to host. You're going to come to Long Wharf Theater and do a reading. So it's done. Like, I'll get all the gays there. It'll be great. Yes. We're going to have a great time. You'll read a little bit of the book and then everybody will fawn over you.
Dead serious. Like, let's make it happen. Like, shoot me an email. We'll figure this all out. We'll make it work. I'm ready to go all over the place. I work as a public speaker as well. I'm really sort of pushing that part of my career right now. And writing this book is a way for me to sort of reintroduce myself to the world. So I'm happy to. I will show up. I will show up for the opening of an envelope.
I mean, it's happening now. So he said Perfect.
We got it recorded. Perfect. It's done.
So we do need to wrap this up, but I have two really quick things for you. First, I do want to explore this whole religion and your life topic. So would you be willing to come back on the show at some point to talk to us about
it? Absolutely. I can talk about this until I'm blue in the face.
Okay, amazing. Second, would you and your partner be willing to join me on my new podcast, Love is Love Podcast, to talk about your relationship? Great.
Of course.
So it is all done.
Shameless plugs.
She is nasty. All right. Well, listen, AJ, thank you so much for joining us today. His book, Flipping the Script, again, it will be out September 15th. You can pre-order now, so make sure that you do so. And as we've already stated, we'll have you back on the show to explore religion a little bit more, which will be amazing. And thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate you.
Bye.
Have a wonderful evening. All right, guys. Well, that was AJ Gibson. Again, his book, Flipping the Script, is going to be out September 15th. I'm going to purchase my own copy. I encourage that you guys do the same. I think that there's a lot to be learned from the words that this man has put into paper, and it would be great. So with that, is there anything else that you boys would like to jump into before we
go
home? I'm
sorry. I feel like I really took that conversation.
That was good.
No. Here's the thing, right? When you're having good dialogue and when it's so meaningful and so perfect and concise and clear, just let it go. I'm sitting back. I wasn't worried about the time. I could have talked to that man for 2.5 hours.
I could have looked at him for 2.5 hours. Oh,
Jesus. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of cake. Somebody lied to him.
I don't want to end the show on a negative note, but I feel like it's important to bring up my story. What do you guys think?
So I will let you go ahead and do that. Do what you got to do, and then we'll bring it home.
Okay. Can we just like find something happy for the end of the show?
Like I'm getting married.
What? I thought you were getting divorced.
I was joking. Go.
So it's actually really sad, and I just want to put it out there. We've talked about religion today. We've talked about suicide. We've talked about going through it with flipping the script. But a 9-year-old Jamal Myers was treated horribly in by his Denver classmates, and a 9-year-old came out and committed suicide 4 days after coming out because of his classmates.
That's sad.
A nine-year-old. So
let that sink in. A 9-year-old.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
And I know that this is like super it's a sad topic to cover before we close out the show, but I think it's a very important topic because clearly, you know, we're seeing a spike in suicide with our community, in specific regions, especially. But the fact that this 9-year-old kid had the strength to come out to his classmates and they literally said, you should go kill yourself. And then 4 days later, he did, is such a big problem. And I'm glad that this mother is sharing the story and trying to get it out there so people know about it. But we need to do more. We need to get involved with wherever you are, if you're out, if you can be out, get involved with your local schools. If they don't have an LGBTQ program, try and start one. Build something to support the youth, because a 9-year-old should not be taking his life because he came out. This is something that we can do. We can give.
It's doable.
An hour of our time a week.
We have LGBT centers and programs in a lot of schools. This is not something that is impossible. It is possible, and I think that you're right. You know, if
school should have done more.
Yeah, they should have. Yep. They had a responsibility for the safety of that child, whether it was bullying, whether it was harassing him for his sexual orientation. It just shouldn't happen. And we're talking about a 9-year-old boy, someone who's probably one in third grade.
Yep.
It's just sad.
Yeah, no, the mom said, so 4 days is all it took. I could just imagine what they said to him. My son told my oldest daughter, the kids at the school told him to kill himself. I'm just sad he didn't come to me. I'm so upset that he thought that was his option.
And it's sad.
Yep.
Well, that being said, you know, not only, as Nick suggested, seek ways to be able to at least donate an hour of your time a week to be able to, you know, better someone's life, but if you need to reach out to someone, you know, there is the Trevor Project, that hotline. It's called the Trevor Lifeline. It's 1-866-488-7386. You can go to the trevorproject.org, and if you prefer to chat online, if you're a typer, you can actually go right on their live chat and chat with someone that could actually talk you through, you know, what your issue is and what you're looking to resolve. And also there's the Trevor text line. So you can do, you can text to area code 202-304-1200. These services are available for anyone who needs them, really. And we encourage that you share that information if possible.
And I think it's also important to note, too, it's like there are not only for people like this child, this 9-year-old, this baby, this 9-year-old kid who maybe needed to reach out to somebody, but for parents who don't know what the process is, how to react, you know, how to support. Like Mama Kim, reach out, find organizations, find a podcast, find whatever it is that can educate you on the community and ways and ways to support your children. That is how you're going to save your kids from a situation like this.
I agree. All right. Well, with that being said, I think that we should bring this home. We've got just two more things to cover, which, of course, it is our Gay Talk term for the week and our This Day in Gay History. So, Nick?
Oh, shit. I'm still talking. All right, everybody. So, this week's Gay Talk term, of course, cursive, brought to you by UnicornBooty.com is
really.
Hobosexual. Hobosexual, sex partner whose performance was inadequate. I can't talk. I've been talking so much. Can somebody say the word?
Inadequate.
Inadequate. Thank you. It was not happening. My tongue wasn't doing it. So, hobosexual, sex partner whose performance was inadequate, or a synonym for that would be bumfuck or loose fit. Anyway, that is your Gay Talk term this week.
All right. And Christopher?
So proud of you. Oh, so proud of you. You got through it, though. You got through it. So, on this day in gay history, brought to you, of course, by
UnicornBooty.com.
Not really.
Yeah, it is.
Where, here in the USA, on August 27th, 1951, the Supreme Court of California rules in Stallman versus Riley. The court rules that the mere congregation of homosexuals at a bar is not sufficient grounds for suspending the bar's liquor license. The case dealt with the Black Cat Bar, a San Francisco gay bar that was the target of a 15-year shutdown campaign by state and local authorities.
And believe it or not, I think that was one of the oldest bars at the time, with the Brook here in Connecticut. One of the second oldest. But yeah, it's crazy. And to think that in New York State, being homosexual was equated with having some sort of mental disorder, mm-hmm. and you couldn't serve mentally ill people alcohol. Right. And that's the whole issue with what ended up being these riots at Stonewall. So yeah, awesome.
Interesting stuff.
And again, it's always California. Have you noticed that, you know, usually California is at the forefront of all these laws and regulations and specific things that just sort of kind of trickle down to the rest of the states.
Very interesting.
Yakala. All right. Well, listen, we're bringing this home.
It's more Trisha's face.
Well, if you love the show, make sure that you rate and review our show. Doing so will help others know about the show and ensure it becomes more visible within our podcasting community. By subscribing to our show, you get the latest and greatest of our amazing, beautiful three voices delivered right to your favorite device as soon as the episode is published. You can also support us on Patreon. With Patreon, you, our listeners, can help support the show with a pledge donation. Those donations are collected monthly and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. So thank you to our Patreons, Chris.
Next week, we're very excited to welcome back to the show Patrick Dunn. Yes, indeed. Patrick is the executive director of the New Haven Pride Center, and we're going to be highlighting all the upcoming Pride events in the great city of New Haven.
Jawohl.
Oh my God, we haven't heard that one in a while. So thank you, thank you, thank you to our guest, AJ Gibson, author of Flipping the Script. All the information on his book will be available on tonight's post, as well as ajgibsontv.com.
But remember, Amazon, 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 Amazon. That was doing a favor for him.
Thanks. Okay.
You're welcome.
Amazon. Yes. And he's
all proceeds go to Gay Talk. He doesn't know that
yet. He thought he was signing a release.
Let me open the box of safety. You want to pick out your condoms?
Yes, this one. I'm going to put this rubber on it.
Okay.
All righty. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces, you can find us on social media, big surprise, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And I would just like to remind everyone, and thank you for listening to the Trish Show today, and that we do have more cake than icing. If you need to reach out to us, you can just head on over to our website and click on the Contact Us tab at the top of the web browser, where you can leave comments, suggest topics, or for the cast or an individual cast member. You can also call us and leave us a question via voice message. You can do so by calling 334-GAY-TALK. Or if you need all those numbers, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget, we're live streaming every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream on digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a good night.
Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.